Well, tonight then I will continue on with brachot, but if that's the topic that I have to talk about, maybe I should do some warm-up.
What was the topic then? What was the
topic then? Postmodernity. I don't even know what the word means. Well, so I have enough trouble with modernity, but I suppose I can ask Aviva to explain to me what postmodernity is.
Halachic responses to modern science and technology.
Postmodernity?
No, that's the overarching topic, but the actual title of the talk that you didn't know.
I didn't know. Yeah, okay. All right. So I think then tonight we will continue in Masechet Brachot, and then next Wednesday night I'd better start thinking about this lecture that I have to give the following week, so I'll use this as an opportunity of a warm-up that I have to sort of really understand from Svi. You should ask him what really your topic is. That's okay. All right. So let's start. So here's a subject which sort of comes up in the Sefer Brachot. Okay. So the Gemara in Brachot that I'm citing is very short. So it's a Gemara in Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, and it says, "Va'amgli Rav Chista Amar Zeiri, Kol Hamugmarot, all forms of incense." That's apparently like now in the street people in New York, but in the old days it used to be fairly regular that after a meal they would run a little incense, I guess, to get the bad smell of whatever is left over from the food out of the house or what have you. That's called a mugmal. At any event, on all this incense that's normally burnt after the meal, mevarchin aleihem borei atzei v'samim. Chutz mi musk, shemin chayahu. With the exception of musk, which is not a vegetable derivative, but an animal derivative, shemevarchin alav borei minei v'samim. Okay? So, let me remind you of what musk is. So if you turn to my last page, page 46, musk, Latin muscus, late Greek muscos, possibly Persian mushk, from Sanskrit mushka, the scrotum, the name originally given to a perfume obtained from the strong-smelling substance secreted in a gland by the musk deer, and hence applied to other animals and also to plants possessing a similar odor. The variety that appears in commerce is a secretion of the musk deer, but the odor is also emitted by the musk ox and the musk rat of India and Europe, by the musk duck of West Australia, the musk shrew, and the musk beetle, the alligator of Central America, and by several other animals. In the vegetable kingdom, it is present in the common musk, the muskwood, and so to obtain the perfume from the musk deer, the animal is killed and the gland completely removed and dried, either in the sun on a hot stone or by immersion in hot oil. It appears in commerce as musk in pod, i.e. the glands are entire, or as musk in grain, in which the perfume has been extracted from its receptacle. Three kinds are recognized, and the Chinese is the best. Good musk is of a dark purplish color, dry, smooth, unctuous to the touch, and bitter in taste. It dissolves in boiling water to the extent of about one half. Alcohol takes up a third of the substance, and so on. So that's what musk is. A perfume, an animal product. And the Gemara says that this animal product, therefore, you can't make borei atzei v'samim on it, so you make the generic borei minei v'samim. Okay? Rabbi Yonah, Rabbeinu Yonah, in commenting on this, says, V'Rabbi Meir ha-Levi Zal haya oser oto ba'achila mepnei chashash dam. The Rama used to prohibit the use of musk as a food additive because of some prohibition. Since this is a gland or a secretion from the gland, and remember the old ancient theory always was that various types of secreted substances are converted blood. The Gemara says, dam ne'akar v'naseh chalav, or lactating woman's milk really is transformed blood and so on. This was the general conception. And therefore, since this is an animal product, you can't use it in food. That's what Rav Meir HaLevi said. V'yefshar latepo tam lahatir. But Rabbeinu Yonah says that there is good reason to allow the use of musk as a food additive. V'lomar b'peresh ba'almahu. And to say that it's just considered as a secretion, but as something, as a transformed, denatured substance, rather than as blood. V'afal pi shemetchila hayadam, v'metchila hudam, lo chayshina lo hachi debata hashta azlina. Even though this may have originated from the blood of the animal, it's not considered so now because we pay attention to what the object is as it exists. And then he gives a proof for this fact. Teda, shaharei hadvash, honey, im nafalet bo chaticha shel isur, some prohibited food falls into the honey, and this prohibited food then becomes candied, right? So this is a typical process if something stays in honey for a while, that the sugar crystals go and replace a lot of the substance that is in the original thing. Ein hadvash asur, af al pisha isur nimuach betoch hadvash. Even if this isur becomes dissolved within the honey, the honey itself does not become prohibited. And why? Kevan shederech hadvash lachazir hadavash enotel etelcho kmo dvash tayinen le umutav. Since it's a property of honey to crystallize, to turn anything that's soaking in it into a form of crystalline substance itself, sugarize it in other words, then that substance has become converted into dvash and becomes permissible. Therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah is establishing the principle that if something which was originally isul, some substance which is prohibited, a piece of meat, some flies, some bees, what have you, and they have then converted, have changed their form, have transformed from meat into sugarized meat or what have you, then it loses its status of isur and becomes permitted. L'chadchila, yes, mutar. Hachinami afal pi shemetchila hayadam. Therefore, here as well with the musk, even though it may have originated as the congealed blood of an animal, it underwent a sufficient transformation. Kevan she'achshav yatsa mitoratam batahashta azlinan. We follow what it is at present, and it has been transformed, and therefore lost its status of isur. And therefore, even if it improves the food substance, when you're using it as an additive, it's permissible. So Rabbeinu Yonah is introducing a novel principle. This novel principle is that any object of Isu, if it becomes drastically transformed by some process, say by a chemical process, then it loses its status of Isu. So any form of extreme chemical processing of food, where the processed substance now is changed from its original form, becomes muta.
What about produces that all have their own, that's a different size, they all have their own gelatin?
Well, we'll see. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, gelatin is permissible.
Would that be the sauce? Or
yeah. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, gelatin will be permissible. Okay?
Made from even treif bones.
Yeah. If you take treifa bones, you grind them up, you process them chemically, and end up with a powder, mm-hmm. which has no resemblance to the original substance, says Rabbeinu Yonah, it is permissible.
Nothing to do with roi l'achilas kelev?
According to Rabbeinu Yonah, it has nothing to do with roi l'achilas kelev or not roi l'achilas kelev. A transformed substance, even if in all stages of the transformation it remained edible, is permissible if the substance is actually transformed.
From the wording of Rabbeinu Yonah, he says the devash is permissible. Can one say that he thinks that according to the description you're making, that even the substance within it that has crystallized?
That's what he says. He says that we can use, he draws a conclusion that we can use this musk as an additive because it has undergone a transformation. And he brings a proof from the case of some substance which is absorbed into the dvash because it has become crystallized.
Where is the original source of the dvash?
So that the Rush says. The Rush, in commenting upon Rabbeinu Yonah, says, V'nirada hafilo rayatot suricha ra'aya. Where does Rabbeinu Yonah, in fact, derive this idea? He has to bring proof for his argument. He's basing his argument on a on an analogy with Dvash, but he hasn't substantiated his case for Dvash. If we turn to my page 3, I xeroxed to you the Rush in its entirety. It's the Siman Lamed Hei, Hu Omer Al Mugmar, etc. If you look at note Ayin, right? Commenting on that makes an important point. He says on my page 3, but it's Ayin now in the footnote. He says, Rabbeinu Yonah did not have to bring any proof to his case. Since it's general practice that we eat honey and we don't bother to extract the bees or the pieces of bee leg or purify it or remove any of the isur that's in there. So Rabbeinu Yonah was just arguing from everyday practice. Right? Like Chaim's article. Since everybody eats honey, nobody worries about a new chumra. Maybe there's a little worm in the honey or anything else.
No microscopic investigation.
No, any kind of, even large, even if a large number of flies or whatever fall into the honey, people would normally eat the honey, and they would cook the honey, and they would use it, and they would never worry about any isur. So the Madane Yantav says, since that's everyday practice, Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't have to bring a proof from the Gemara. Everybody does it. Therefore, it must be permitted. Therefore, there must be a principle, and therefore... Okay.
What's the principle?
The principle, he says, is that an Isur, which has become transformed, loses its status of Isur.
How long a process, though, is it? If the fly fell in now, can you eat it a second?
Probably not. But it takes a while. But he's saying that something like musk, which has been completely transformed from its original state by processing, even though it never necessarily, according to Rabbi Yonah, went through a stage in which it was ever non-edible, nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yonah, it becomes permissible.
I thought the principle would have been in the case you decided about eating dvash with insects and so forth would be of what the people are doing.
Yeah.
It's a minhag. Right. It's not a question of a chemical or...
Well, he has to explain the minhag. He's saying since what Ramadan Ayyantav says is that Rabbeinu Yonah didn't have to bring a proof from a text. He didn't have to find a Gemara that substantiated it. Since everybody was... behaving this way, there must have been an underlying reason, arguing from practice to an underlying reason, and that was his underlying reason.
There's no way of saying, I'm asking too many questions, but there's no way of saying that maybe the minhag was taking place on a halachic...
error?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what the Madnei Yantav says. You don't say. Since it was a universal custom, you don't become a formak and impose new chumras that didn't exist. You can argue from common practice. All right, the Rush disagrees. He questions Rabbeinu Yonah's point. However, if we take a look, if we turn to my page, I guess it is, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4 it must be. My page 4, I have here the Ran. The Ran on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which also is talking about Dvash. This is now... honey that you've acquired from a non-Jew, are you allowed to use? Do you need a hechsher on honey? That's the question here that the Gemara is asking. Suppose you get honey from a non-Jewish source. The Gemara says, "Dvash l'may nichashle." What could a problem be? Imishum iruve mischach sorry. If something, some foreign substance is mixed into the dvash, it spoils it. Imishum bishuleo veidkochavim. If because of the fact that you're not allowed to consume food that's been cooked by a non-Jew. The principle is foods that can be eaten raw, even if it has been cooked. There's no prohibition of bishul akum. If it's because it's prepared in a pot that has that is non-kosher, or and therefore is going to have some taste of the isur, notain tam lefgam mutar. Any taste that would be added to the dvash from such a pot would render it less tasty than before, and therefore we don't have to worry about that either. If we take a look in the Ran, on the right-hand side, just a little bit before, below where it says Gemara, it says Misrach, sorry, Hilkach, the Ran says, Lo Ma'arvi, right here on the right-hand column. Hilkach Lo Ma'arvi. Therefore, no one is going to mix in other substances into the Dvash. Va'acherim Pirshu. And an alternative explanation is,
שדרכו לערב בדבש דברים אחרים ונימוקו בתוכו וחוזרים דבש.
If other items are going to be put into the dvash, which are then become dissolved and turned into dvash, there's no problem with that. Lefi shehamitarev bo ad shelo nimuach masriach umutar. In the process of the substance becoming candied and turning into dvash, it goes through a stage in which it is spoiled, not fit for human consumption, and therefore is permissible. Okay? וכדיאמינן בתמורה פרק כל האיסורים, אפרוח ביצת טריפה, a chick that has grown from an egg which was laid by a treifa chicken, for example, mutar. Even though the egg itself was prohibited, the chick that hatches from this egg is permitted. Lachin da'emat kagadil, when does the chick actually grow? Lachin misrach, after the egg has become inedible in the process of growing from an egg and subdividing and becoming an embryo and then becoming a chick. It goes through a stage in which it's not fit for human consumption, and therefore hahi shaita afwa ba'almahi, it's just considered as dirt, as not as a food substance, and therefore once the chick is hatched, it's panim chadashot, the Gemara says, a new item. So therefore the Ran is agreeing with the facts of Rabbeinu Yonah, but introducing a separate principle. According to the Ran, a foodstuff which is transformed, but in the process of being transformed, passes through a stage in which it is inedible, becomes mutar. So he adds an additional clause that Rabbeinu Yonah didn't have. And the purpose of tonight's shiur is to discuss this particular halacha and its various, its history and its ramification. We don't find anyone who disagrees with the Rav. That is, the Rush disagrees with Rabbeinu Yonah insofar that Rabbeinu Yonah does not employ this idea of something having passed through an inedible stage. But the Ra, if you add the additional requirement that in the process of being, in the course of being processed, the substance passes through an inedible stage, then we don't find any disagreement on this point. And what we will find is a whole series of tshuvot and piskei halacha from, say, the time of Rabbeinu Yonah and the time of the Rashba, Hashbats and the Radvaz, up through about the 1950s, all of which sustain this position. In other words, we won't find a single objection to the notion that gelatin should be mutar until something happens, probably of a political nature.
Gelatin should be.
All opinions. Yeah, no objections.
So why do we need to know? A VH on intelligence. That's political, right?
Let's see the facts. You draw your own conclusions.
With maple syrup, would be the same. Huh? Would maple syrup come under the same head?
What is maple syrup?
No, I mean from the tree, right?
Yeah. Out.
But the question of they're putting a piece of bacon to deform it, but otherwise it forms.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Evidently, the processing, you put a piece of bacon to...
I don't know.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, let's stick to gelatin. Okay. So let's go back to my page one. Klal amru b'taharot. So the Mishnah in Masechet Tarot is dealing with the law of Tumat Ochlim. In the old days when you had notions of Tumah v'Tahara, one category of Tumah was foodstuffs can become Tameh. Things that are not food cannot become Tameh. So the question is, what's the definition of food? So the Mishnah says, Kalam u'b'Tarot, Kalam yuchad la'ochel adam Tameh, ad shi'paseil mi'ochel hakelev. In order to lose it, once something is considered as human food, then it retains that status until it becomes unfit for animal consumption. Something that is not normally considered as human foodstuff is not cannot become Tameh unless it has specifically been set aside for that purpose. Ketzad, Gozal Shenafal Lagak, if a chick fell into a vat, V'chashav Alav Lahalotol Nachri, you take it out of there with the intent of giving it to your non-Jewish neighbor to eat, Tameh, it's then been set aside for food, and therefore can acquire Tumah. Lekelev, if you pulled it out to feed it to one of your animals, then it's Tahol. In other words, the gozel by itself was not normally considered as, you know, a dead chick is not normally considered as human food unless you specifically intended for that purpose. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, metamei chashav alav cheresh shoteh v'katan tahor im heluhu tamei sheyesh lehen ma'asevi ein lehen machsheva. Okay, so this is one Mishnah which states that as far as the laws of tumat ochlim are concerned, something can lose its status if it has passed. It becomes unfit for animal consumption. Here's another Mishnah. Merchatz tmeya, zayata tmeya. The condensation from a pool of water, which is tameh, the condensation itself is tameh. Utahora, if the water itself is not tameh, but it's considered as she'uvim for one reason or other, then the condensation is v'chiyutan. It counts as a mashke in order to make something ra'ui l'tumah. Ha'brecha she'bayit, the pool that's in the house, ha'bayit mezi'a machmata, and the walls of a house have condensation from the vapors that are arising from this pool. Im t'meya, if the water in that pool is tamei, zayat kol ha'bayit she'machmata brecha t'meya. So here we see a slightly contradictory principle that a fluid which is condensed from a vapor, in other words, by a distillation process, has not lost its identity as something which is tameh. Right? It went through a stage in which it was... Let's take a look at two more Gemarot which are relevant to us. Gufa, this is Gemara in Brachot. Ba'pada amar... Tumah hamura ad legeir. As far as the laws of tumat nevela are concerned, something loses its status of nevela as soon as it becomes unfit for human consumption. Piece of meat, piece of carrion, which was originally a fit for human consumption and has the status of being tameh, it decays. If it decays sufficiently to be unfit for human consumption, it loses its status as nevela. But tumat kala, but as far as whether it's considered ochel, as far as the laws of tumat ochlim are concerned, ad lekelev. From Rabbi Yochanan, me'achat zu v'achat zu ad lekelev. That both as far as losing its status of tumat nevela is concerned and the status of tumat ochlim are concerned until it becomes unfit for animal consumption. But in any event, the Gemara, according to everyone, agrees that if something becomes unfit for animal consumption, it loses its status as far as the laws of Tumah are concerned.
It's a hard concept. I can't understand.
What?
Tumah Tahor, because I'm the door kashrus anyway.
I don't know. That it has nothing to do with it. It's analogous. We see explicitly that as far as the laws of Tumah Tahor are concerned, something which decays becomes, eventually loses its status. Piece of meat is... Tameh, if it's a piece of carrion.
A novella.
And now it decays, eventually turns into dirt, into dust. It's completely...
Then it's all right.
Then it's not Tameh anymore, right. I mean, otherwise you'll never have anything. Right? A piece of... You go walking on the ground, some of it may have been some decayed substance or something else.
You won't get the cattle...
So therefore, what the Gemara says is that there are two possible levels in which this substance loses its identity as far as the laws of Tumah and Tahor are concerned. One possibility is when it becomes unfit for human consumption, and the other possibility is when it becomes unfit for animal consumption. But past the stage when it becomes unfit even for animal consumption, it's become so decayed that even an animal won't eat it, won't touch it, then it loses its status.
It becomes Tahor.
That's what the Gemara is saying. Very clear. All right, and then the next is this Gemara that we already saw quoted by the Ran. The question is what the status is of the offspring of an animal which is treifa. And that there's a machloket between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim.
My timer, I can't look like a little bit of the Avira Karabia. Remember, the notion of a human egg or an animal egg was relatively late, so that therefore the presumption was that the animal that was growing in the female cow or what have you was not necessarily growing from an egg of the mother, but it was something that was being grown by the mother. But the egg of a chicken is obviously something that's laid by the chicken. So that's the principle here, that a chick, even though the egg itself is prohibited, the beitzat treifa, the chick which grows from this egg becomes permissible because the egg passes through a stage in which it's not fit for human consumption. Okay? Let's take a look at a couple of more sources from the Gemara before passing to a whole series of tshuvot. The Mishnah in Bechorot says, my page 5, Parah sheyalda kamin chamor, v'chamor sheyalda kamin sus, patur min ha-bechora sheneimor, petach chamor shnei pamim, ad sheyevlad chamor v'hanolad chamor. Umahin be'achila. What if an animal gives birth to a monster, that is, a child that looks like the animal of some other species? So the Gemara says, Mishnah says, Tahorashi alba kimin behemat meya mutar ba'akhila. Any child produced, animal produced by a behemat tahora, even if it looks like Now the Mishnah has this general principle that something, the context in which the Mishnah is using this is referring to offspring, right? The offspring of a cow is considered to be a cow, that is, even if it doesn't look like one. But the Gemara takes this principle of Ayotzei min ha-tameya tameya v'ayotzei min ha-tahora to apply to other things like milk or eggs or what have you. And if we take a look at the Rambam, v'yamu she-ayotzei min ha-tamei tamei rotze b'chach ha-chalav nosaf al-avadol kimo she-hizkir. Milk of a non-kosher animal is prohibited. V'gam ha-beitzim zulati chalav ha-adam bilvad she-humuta. So human milk is permissible, but other forms of animal milk are prohibited. If you remember, I'm not going to go through this now, but if we return to my page 8, there was a long Tosfot that we studied when we were learning the Sefer Chulin on this issue of eggs. Tosfot is troubled by the problem that the Gemara needs a special pasuk to tell you that the egg of a non-kosher bird is considered as non-kosher. Bataya Anad Gemara concludes that the egg is of a non-kosher bird is prohibited. And Lutosus raises this problem of why do you need a pasuk for this if you have a general principle of a yotzei min ha-tamei tamei ve-yotzei min ha-taho taho, and comes to the strange to us conclusion that eggs form a special category and therefore cannot really find the prohibition for tumata, for beitzat hasheretz, if you remember when we studied this. Tosfos, according to Tosfos, there's some minor possibility that turtle eggs, for example, would not be prohibited because they fall between the stools. On the one hand, they're eggs, and therefore the law of ayotzei min ha-tamei tamei doesn't apply to them for one reason or another. And on the other hand, they're not specifically prohibited. I'm not saying that this is permissible. This is not a halakhically accepted viewpoint, but it's interesting that Tosfos comes to grips with that. And finally, on my page 7, I won't read it, but you can read it in detail, the Gemara has problems with honey itself. If Hayotzei min HaTameh is Tameh, this is the Gemara in Brachot referring to this Mishnah, then after all honey is the excretion of a bee, and the bee is an animal, is a bird which is is an insect which is Tameh, it's a Sheret Sa'ov. Therefore, the honey should be prohibited according to this principle. And the Gemara, of course, arguing again from practice, since everybody uses bees' honey, there must be some reason why it's permitted, comes up with a theory. The Gemara's theory is that the honey never really was a secretion of the bee. The bee absorbs the nectar from the various flowers and then carries it to the hive and regurgitates it, but it's not to be construed as a secretion. Factually, this isn't correct, but the Gemara uses that as a reason to permit the... Now let's go through a whole series of tshuvot. I'll go through some of them relatively fast and then some of them a little bit more slowly. The first tshuva is on my page 9, the tshuva of Rav Chaim Ozawa. Katav Rabbeinu Simcha v'zeh lashono al hayayin shenitkareach anidan. What about wine which has turned into jelly, which has frozen? Shabatel mitorat mashke kiditanya b'perek beis d'tarot mayim t'meim shehiglidu ve'ein v'hem mashke tofeach tahorim. That when water freezes, it loses its status of mayim tmeim. Here also, perhaps, the wine, when it's become frozen or jellied, loses its status. Nimchu v'chazru l'tomata nishana, alma al yidei she'iglidu batel mitarat mashke u'pocha himenu tuma sha'hayta alav. V'kol shekein she'eno mekabel tuma. V'hu adin she'eno mitnasech al yidei magoi, ho'il ve'ein tarat mashke alav. So Rabbeinu Yonah's position is that solidified wine is permissible. Umashe kshita al mashe katavti shebaudo gelad eno esur mishum yayin nesach vi kipaka isura mene kidepach gabi chomets vachim mishum de achmitz paka isura mene tikshilach vachim mishum de aglid pokatum matamete ela lo dame la chomets. Vinegar is different from jellied wine, from frozen wine. Dolo batel mi mashke ad kan dvarav vachol orech dvarav lo katavti. וכאין זה כתב רבנו משה ברחסדוי פגימו לתארות את נן הרותיו של הבשר ותפשו של גריסים והחלב אלו מינים להכין להיות תופח וכרושים כרשו הרי אלו שניים שהאוכל פוחת מבצם מקבל תומה מדרבנו ואחר כשהתחילו להיפרש קיבלו תומה ממשקין שעדיין לא כרשו חזרו ונמיכו כביצם מוכוונת טהור וכשהתחילו להיות נמוכים לא היה כביצה אוכל לתמי את המשקה ואומר לבנו הייתה בפנים חדשות פה וכאן. Okay, I don't want to go into the details of those long discussions of the laws of Mashkeh, but the point is that Rabbeinu Simcha takes the position that even straight out Yayin Nesach, if it has become frozen or jellied, loses its status of Yisu and becomes permissible. This is not Halacha L'maisa, we don't decide this way, and the rest of the Tshuva devotes itself to the question about the production of jelly from grapes, where perhaps they don't draw the wine off, and the grape jelly is made immediately from in the processing of the grapes, in which case it would become permissible. But this is an interesting example of a situation in which, again, a very elementary form of conversion from wine to grape jelly makes the object permissible, even though it was prohibited before.
Would that be water to ice?
Similar to water to ice.
What about if it defrosts the ice?
Even if it's a temporary situation.
He doesn't say that. Yeah, he's talking about jelly. Okay. Now let's take a look at the Rashba on my next page. I'm sorry that this is so tiny, but something broke down at the printer at Widener. And this is an enlarged version of what the thing was printing out. Sha'alta. Mirkachat shenaflu l'tocho numalim harbe. You had some kind of a jam in which a whole lot of ants fell in. She'i efshar levror otam mitocha. You just can't possibly pick out all of the ants that are falling into this. V'yavru ala shnei masal chodesh. And they sat out in the pantry for a 12-month period. Can you eat this jam that may have a few bits of ants here and there that you're incapable of picking every single one out? The Amata, I don't know, I just passed store 24 in Cambridge sells chocolate-covered crickets. So, so. The Amata. ואמרתה שיראה לך שהיא מותרת מפני שאמרו זל כל דבר שאין בו עצם אינו מתקיים 12 חודש. Any animal which is not boned doesn't last 12 months. תשובה, יפה אמרתה, your decision that this should become permissible is a good idea, לפי שאינו מתקיים אמרו לא חי ולא מת, וזוהי שאמרו הני תמריד אחד ובתרי סייחה שריין, I'm a little worried about the case of some ants falling into a jelly, because the jelly itself is a preservative. Shehena sina yedei dvash. It's made with sugar or with honey. Ulefisha advash nireh sheyesh lo shtei sgulot. Achat l'maher l'mchot u'l'chalot ha'dvarim ha'nechakrim ha'naflin l'tocho. On the one hand, it tends to dissolve and sugarize all things that fall into it. V'hashniya, the other property that honey has, l'ha'amiru l'kayim ha'dvarim ha'nechakrim ha'nitmanin l'tocho. Again, it's used as a preservative. U'kolo sh'amur v'bava batra, gabi hurdus, ketmina b'dvash sheva shanim. The famous story that Hurdus murdered his wife and then preserved her by keeping her in a vat of honey for 7 years. So honey acts as a preservative, and therefore the Rashba says maybe these ants don't disappear at all. If we take a look at the Radvaz's comment on this, but I think you can read it a little bit better if you turn to my page 12. It's the same tshuva, but I think there's the one on page 12 out a little bit earlier. So it's a bit large. Sha'alta mimeni al masha hishiv ha-rashba she-sha'alu mimenu al milkachat she-naflu l'tolcha numalim harbei v'i efshar livro v'ze lashon tshuvato. This was his response. Yofeh amalta Lafish Eino Mitkayim, Amru Lo Chai Velo Met, etc. He quotes the Rashba's Tshuva. And this is the Radvaz's, Radvaz's 16th century response to the Rashba. Tshuva, Eini Roet Kan Chshash Isu. I can't see any problem with this jelly in which the ants are falling in. לפי שמה שאמרו רבינו זל דברים שאין להם עצם אינו מתקיים את גבי סחודש לא חי ולא מת כמו שכתב הרב מדלו אמרו אינו חיה יובי סחודש. It doesn't say that an insect can't live for 12 months. אין פירושו שאינו מתקיימת. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but אין לו שוב שום מציאות אחר יובי סחודש, אלא פירושו אינו מתקיימת להיקרי בריה לא חי ולא מת. It just doesn't, it loses its identity as an individual. אלא חוזרת להיות עפר. אף על פי שיש לה קצת מציאות, even though it may still have some visible existence, שהרי הדברים נראים לעין שכל מיני קטניות הנולדים בהם תולעים אחרי י' בייס קודש, אתה רואה בנקב רושם התלה. That you can see wormholes in קטניות even after a 12-month period. ומה שנמצא בתוך הנקב הוא משונה, אלא מה ידלממה אף על פי שרימושו ניכר, אף רב העלמהו. תלקח בנידה דדן, נמי, הדבש מעמיד הדבר הנתמן בתוכו בצורתו כמו שהיה בתחילה או קרוב לו. The honey may preserve the form of the substance, אבל אחר שערו עליו יבי חודש מתהפך הדבר הוא לדבש, לפי שהבנבלת בתוכו, אף על פי שתבנית הדבר הוא עומד כמו שהיה. תדע, proof, שהרי המוס דם היה, ומותר לתנו במרקחה. Musk was originally blood and it's been converted into something else, and you're allowed to use it in jams and so on. V'chein ha-mumia, they used to use flesh from mummies as for medicinal purposes. In Egypt they had a lot of them. That's where the Radvaz was the chief rabbi in Cairo for many, many years, 50 or 60 years. V'chein ha-mumia, mumia means mummy. Basar adam hu, it's human flesh, and mutal et no betrufot, you're allowed to use it as part of medication, af al pi she'ein sham sakana, lefi she'merov hazman chazal liyot afar. Hilkach benidon dedan kol biyo she'ein la'etzem she'avar lav yudbeiz chodesh kol makom she'tipol ein la'chush ta'afra ba'al mahu u'midat chasidut hu livro otam o la'viram b'misnenet demisha. If you want to be especially froh, you can pass this jam or the honey through the cheesecloth, but it's not really necessary. Okay, now let's turn back one page to my page 11, and then we'll, this is the tshuva from the Tashbatz, so we're dealing a century earlier, and then we'll come back to the most famous of the tshuvot of the Radbaz. We'll let's do this first. My page 11.
By the way, Rekaka is a pharmacy today, isn't it, Israel? Rekaka?
It comes from the same root, something which is, you know, ground up a recipe.
And they used to have a water in Pasco.
Okay. The inyan hamayim hasrufim. In other words, this is now distilled spirits. This is live water. Uvelashon arvi maya alchaya. Again, the same principle. Okay, so the problem here is cognac and its various substances. Something that has been distilled from wine. Yesh matirin oto, some allow the use of distilled spirits made from wine, mipnei she'eino ela ether ba'alma, because it's only a fraction of the original substance, so therefore...
What was the yeser originally? Because the goy made it?
Yeah, you had yayin nesach, you had stam yayin, right? You had a bottle, you distilled the spirits from wine which was prohibited. But remember, the distilled spirit is only a fraction of the original liquid. It's a distilled object. It's a processed object.
By a gallon of blue nun wine, so you can have a cup of it, but distill it in the cognac.
Right. So the cognac is... Okay. V'harehu kezagin v'chatzanin shel yayin nesach shuhei mutarim, he says. V'harei, he says, anu matirim lehedya tartar shel yayin nesach. Nobody has had any problem using cream of tartar. Remember, tartar is the salt, the residues from the dreg in the cask of the wine. Crystals that form in the wine. And he says nobody has ever raised the problem that you should need a heksher for cream of tartar, which is a wine product after all. ושמתי מי שאמר שאפילו היה דינו כאפר אפילו הכי אסור והביא ראיה בדיומין ובפרק הסוחר את הפועל הוא גבו דיה גבי לסתם ינם etc. etc. I don't want to go through the details of this argument. He sort of leaves this halfway. Obviously some people were drinking cognac which had been derived from from non-Jewish wine, and he feels uncomfortable with the heter of, because of the fact that it's been distilled, it lost its status of Yisur, but on the other hand, he doesn't come out with a clear prohibition. But what he does say, without any question, is that the salts, the cream of tartar, which is made from what we call in Yiddish, Weinstein, your name,
really? means
tartar, the salts of the rock of wine, salts of wine, are permissible without any question. You don't need a heksher, even though they may come directly from that. Okay. Now let's turn to my page.
So how does that compare to what we learned before about
He's saying that since...
It stays that way, the tar...
No, but here something's become a crystal. Crystal has changed its form, it's a different substance, it's not edible as it is. You can't eat the crystal.
Yeah, but I must have, excuse me, the wine to cognac.
Yeah, so that's
why
the problem.
Retain its original, like tummy to tummy, it should remain.
Well, that's why I quoted the Mishnah Machshirim seems to indicate that a distillation process is not considered a transformation. For some reason or other, the Tashbatz doesn't bring that, but he's unhappy with the proposed heter. So he's not willing to give his stamp of approval to allow the drinking of non-Jewish cognac. But on the other hand, he has no problem, you don't need an OU on the cream of tartar, even though it is a wine product, since it's been processed and converted into salt, then it becomes permissible.
Weisstein is cream of tartar?
No, Weisstein is the rock of wine, the tartar. We'll see when we get to the Tshuva L'Marsham, the Yiddish word for it is exactly that. You should at least know what your name means.
Yeah, I gotta tell people that. Cream of powder sounds better.
Okay. Sha'al Taminen. This is my page. My page 13. Sha'al Taminen. Odiachad da'ati. Al mash samchu elu shenotnim betavshil omer kachat hamask. Vehu dam hayat meya shenitzrach. וכן נהגו לאכול הטריאק אף על פי שלא במקום חולי והיש בו מבשר האפה ובשר שאר נחשים. So, the flesh of an asp and other poisonous snakes are used in the preparation of medication, even for non-life-threatening diseases, and similarly the musk is used as an additive in food. What's the basis for this tete? Tshuva. Al inyan hamas, hinei hu machloket haramaz al hayaoser oto, v'rabim heitiru. V'ani omer ki ein bo tzad isur klap. There can't be anything wrong with the usage of musk. Chadash arei ein otnim oto b'makachat lo b'shum davar ela p'nei reichol. It's only used for its aromatic substance, ve'eino noten elo reach tolu levasein hu da'arit ve'lo l'tam, uva'al makayim elam derech alav miltahi. On the one hand, it's only used for as a perfume, and we never have prohibited an odor. Ve'tu, shekvar nitbatel mitoach ochel barov hazman, v'chazar liyot afar ba'alma. Ve'dami lachech halav shebekeva, it's like curdled milk that's found in the stomach of a calf, shekozel liyot pir sha'ach agav mitchila hayo'ochel. Ve'rabenu yonazal hevi raya mihadvash, shekol ma shemitarev betorcho, chozel liyot kemoto, uvata hashta azlinen, ve'lo bata meikara.